Hey, hey, have you heard? It's your host, Chris DeMakes, and I'm headed back to the Punk Rock Museum. That's right, the powers that be have invited me back, and I couldn't be more excited. Allow me to be your guide as we wind through 5 decades of punk rock history, merchandise, and memorabilia. Cinco de Mayo weekend, Friday, May 3rd, Saturday, May 4th, and Sunday, May 5th. There'll be 2 tours each day at 12:30 p.m. and 4 p.m. And the best part for me is you. Your stories, your questions, your experiences. Yep, some of you old punkers have taught this guy a thing or two on these tours, and I love it. Head over to thepunkrockmuseum.com for tickets. Don't miss out. Only 30 spots per tour. Get your tickets now at thepunkrockmuseum.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's your host, Chris DeMakes. Do you know that I write custom songs? That's right. I'd love to write you, that special someone, coworker, friend or foe, their very own custom song. Makes a great gift for birthdays, anniversaries, holidays, and more. For more info, email me at chrisdemakes@gmail.com. Now let's get into this awesome episode. Hey gang, we got a killer one lined up for you. Today's guest is my old friend, Jay Navarro, lead vocalist for the Detroit, Michigan punk rock band, The Suicide Machines. Together, we break down the inspiration, writing, recording, and release of the song, Break the Glass, taken from their 1996 debut album, Destruction by Definition. I recall hearing a rough first mix of the track all the way back in December of 1995, when Less Than Jake was touring through California as the Machines were putting the finishing touches on the record, and how I was immediately blown away. Jay credits producer Julian Raymond with not only letting the band be exactly who they were, but also with how he would build the productions, namely in the choruses of the songs, to make them sound huge. I was also humbled and shared a laugh when Jay corrected me on a few misheard lyrics within Break the Glass, things I've been singing incorrectly for ages. Jay and I go way back, and it was also super cool that he was able to fill in the blanks correctly with some of my faded memories from more than a quarter century ago, namely how the two of us first met. For all this and much more, don't touch that dial.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast.
I first heard of the Suicide Machines when you were still called Jack Kevorkian in the Suicide Machines. I got a hold of your Green World demo in 1994 with such classics as Snot Rag, Post Office Death Squad, and the original version of a Van Song. And I was immediately attached to it, attracted to it. I love the sound. There's something about the Suicide Machines, what you guys brought to punk and ska. It was just a little bit dirtier. You had that Detroit thing in there, you know, like you can hear those influences, that MC5 and just that Motor City sound. You know, you released those initial demos on Sluggo's Old School Records, your own label. And then in 1995, Hollywood Records came along and signed the band. And that's really the first time that I met you. And going back and researching here, Jay, it lines up with the timeline, because in December of 1995, we were out doing some, because we got signed in November 95 to Capitol. We were doing some photo shoots and, I don't know, demos and stuff out there. And you guys, I want to say it was with Buck 09. You did a show while you were recording. And that lines up because the record was then mixed in January of 96 by Jerry Finn. And I remember that night you took me out to the band van and you played me a cassette with a rough mix of Break the Glass, which you told me the other day you have and you'd like to share with the listeners. So we're gonna play a snippet of the Break the Glass rough mix that I heard all the way back in December of 1995.
You know, I think I met you before that, though.
Did we meet before then?
Yeah, man. I saw you guys play at the Falcon Club in Hamtramck. I think it was like your first tour.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, man.
That's right.
Yeah, dude. That's how I met all you guys. Jessica was still in the band. And or wait, maybe was she there? Yeah, I think she was there.
No, she was in the band. And you know what? And that makes sense because in December 95, we seemed like long-lost friends. You were so eager. That makes sense that we did meet.
Yep.
That is crazy. I distinctly remember Break the Glass. I think that was the first song you played. I want to say maybe Islands and New Girl and No Face, but for sure it was Break the Glass. And that's why, for sentimental reasons, I picked this track, man. The other day when you went into it in Atlantic City, it just still gives me those goosebumps, man. There's something about this tune. It's awesome.
Yeah, I don't really remember Atlantic City too well.
You don't?
No.
It was a beer festival. You shouldn't.
So.
You guys were having fun. So take us back now. Let's rewind the clock 25 years. What do you remember about writing and the inspiration behind Break the Glass?
We were already kind of messing around with Break the Glass before we even were talking. Like, we had already talked to Julian, but right around the Buck 09 tour that we had done that summer, we were already starting to kind of like mess around with some things just after it, you know what I mean? And before it too. And that riff, the opening riff, was kind of kicking around, and that scale actually had been kicking around for a while. The descending,
the guitar riff.
Yeah. Like, no one ever really knew what to do with it. So that scale was kind of around for a while. And if you listen to the end of the really awful demo that I sent you as well.
The original demo.
Yeah.
Which didn't you say that was called something about my dog is dead or something?
Well, originally I think that or Islands was called My Dog is Dead. I can't remember which one, which is ridiculous. But if you hear the end of the other one I sent you, which was like practice tapes, the end of it sings something, has the hook, like, I, you know, some horrible high school hook, like I Saw You the Other Day or something like that, was actually part of New Girl.
The demo you sent, man, the chorus couldn't have been any different. It was shockingly different.
So yeah, so when you hear the demo or the practice of tape or whatever it was that I sent you, we always wanted to answer Break the Glass with something else, and we never could figure out what, right? And so at the very end of that song, you would hear me just repeat it. He would go, "I break the glass." He'd yell it. Dan would yell it. And I'd be like, "I break the glass," or something like that. And I was trying to make it melodic, and he was yelling it. And everyone's like, "God, why does something, like, I hated repeating it." And I think, you know, I think they liked the fact that I was singing the melodic part of it. I was singing the answer, but it was really dumb that it was repeating. It just didn't seem right. And it was either Dan or Derek that was just like, "I break it down," and then it, you know, the melody kind of moved a little bit more past from what I was already singing it. And it's like, we couldn't figure out forever, like, how to do the answer to it. You know what I mean? And then it just came up. It might have been Derek, actually. "I break it down." I can't remember, but yeah, we're trying to figure it out.
You know, Derek's involvement in the band wasn't just drums. You know, he played keyboards and he did a lot of the backing vocals, which I never knew till later, which is, you know, which was so cool for your band because you had a lot going on vocally, too. The record Destruction by Definition was released on May 21st of 1996. The producer, who I believe was also your A&R person at Hollywood Records, was Julian Raymond. And Julian, I love his productions. I've loved pretty much everything he's done. He's done stuff for Fastball, Glenn Campbell, Hank Williams, and Cheap Trick. He did a Cheap Trick record in 2016, Bang Zoom Crazy Hello, that I think is one of the best records the band has ever put out. And, you know, you, of course, had Jerry Finn mix the record. And we were recording Losing Streak in May of 96 in Gainesville, Florida, when your record was released. I remember Vinny got a copy of it. We were playing in the studio, and I remember going straight to Break the Glass, and I just was like, I was envious. I don't want to say jealous. I wasn't jealous of my friends. I was envious because the record just Losing Streak didn't sound like this. Jerry Finn, man, like the mix on this was just, it was raw, it was punk rock, but it sounded great.
Yeah, it was definitely part of the mix for sure. But I also think that Julian really brought building the choruses as a big, huge tool to those songs. Like he was adding extra guitar parts over extra guitar parts over extra guitar parts with just different tones on the choruses. So when they kicked in, they were gigantic.
And they are.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how they, and then Jerry Finn somehow made it not muddy, considering there's so many guitar tracks on the choruses. He somehow managed to make it not mud out, you know?
Right. I mean, here you were on a Disney label, Hollywood Records, and this was not a family fun record in that sense. This is a punk rock record, man, but it sounded ballsy, but it's still... It sounded pro, you know, it wasn't Green World.
Yeah, dude, we thought we were going to get, you know, kicked off the label quick enough anyways, or like no one was going to buy a record at all, you know what I mean? So we, whatever, it was a shot in the dark with that one when it comes to Disney.
And I'm stoked that you gave Julian props, because I was, you know, we're going to talk about the production. There's a lot going on here, and just the tones are great. And just the fact that Dan played a Rickenbacker guitar. No one was playing Rickenbacker guitars in punk rock. My dad was a Rickenbacker player, and like I grew up around, I got one sitting right here in my studio, and I can hear that in the music. And the fact that, you know, I'm from the Detroit area, you guys are, and then that it just, again, the whole sound, the whole thing, it just felt familiar to me. You guys, of course, done a bunch of Warped tours. Our first Japan tour, Less Than Jake, was in September of 1998 with you guys. You guys had already been over there. I remember the plane ride over, you telling me, oh yeah, man, there's going to be fans waiting for us at the airport. I'm like, what's this guy smoking? And we get to Narita Airport, and there's fans with gifts and flowers. I felt like we were Kiss of the Beatles, man. It was the coolest thing.
Yeah, man. You know, you just made me think about something, not to change subject to Japan. You guys let us jump on a show somewhere outside of LA during the recording of Destruction. We came and played on your guys' gear at like the Salamander Club or something bizarre.
Then that's the night I'm talking about when you played the demos.
Yeah.
You guys came to see us play. You were recording.
That's what it was, dude.
That's what it was. That's right. You guys got up and played a song or two.
Yeah, man. I don't remember who else was playing with you guys.
I want to say maybe the Hippos, because they were doing the California shows on that run.
Yeah, it might have been the Hippos, actually.
Oh my gosh, that's exactly what it was. That's awesome, awesome recall.
Yeah, dude, I was racking my brain about what you were talking about, and I think that's what it was, dude.
I thought that we went, I'm like, why would they do a show while they're recording? No, you're right. You were recording. You came to see us play.
Yep.
And we invited you up to do a song. And I remember you guys being like, we're in studio mode.
Yeah. So I met you guys in Hamtramck. I think it might have been the first time you played Michigan. You had that old beater red van, dude. I remember that thing. It had a ladder on the back, right?
Yeah, it had a ladder on the back. That was the blue and white van.
Was it blue and white? Is that what it was? Sorry.
Yeah. Is there a place called the Mosquito Club back then?
Yeah, Mosquito was after the Falcon.
Yeah, yeah. That is crazy. And that was in 1995 when you jogged my memory. That is when we first met. I also want to talk real quick before we jump into the song. Phil Caffell, he was also listed as a producer, but he's more of did he engineer the record?
Yeah, it's Caffell. Filthy Phil.
Phil Caffell.
Yeah.
Filthy Phil. And his credits are everything from Blue October to Alice Cooper to Eddie Money and the Suicide Machines. I mean, this guy's been around.
He's a really cool dude, man. Like, I can't even begin to tell you. I would go to the bar and hang out with him, man. He's pretty rad. Like, I remember walking into some little British pub, and it was like no one was there, right? There's Slash with two chicks sitting with them drinking. He's like, hey, Slash. Hey, Phil. I'm like, what the fuck, dude? He's like, what is that? Those dudes are homies. Like, oh, this is my friend Jay from the Suicide Machines. Oh, nice to meet you. I'm like, he was just a cool dude, man. Filthy Phil's cool. No matter what, to start the session, Julian would always bring him his favorite brand of super expensive scotch. And he'd bring it proper. He'd bring it with something like a drinking kit for him. You know what I mean? The glasses and shit. It was pretty rad. That's how he started like all the sessions. That's what he would do for him. No matter what, that was like tradition between those two.
And real quick, we're going to jump in here, I promise, in a second to the track. What was this like? You know, you guys had pretty much done demos at this point. You get signed and you're like in a pro studio with like, was it an exciting time? Were you nervous? What was that like?
And dude, you know, so I know you keep mentioning Green World, but after Green World, we did the split with the Rudiments.
Yes. Skank for Brains.
Yeah, we did it at the same studio, right? This is just like home studios. You know what I mean? And at that point, we were kind of starting to finally come into our own after Skank for Brains. Like I was like actually singing more, like singing, not yelling. And I think we were kind of stumbling onto what we were going to finally sound like. We found our sound, I guess you could say, a little bit somewhere in that time between Skank for Brains and Writing for Destruction. But, you know, I remember going out there doing the, we did four demos. And I remember walking into the studio and it may have been Julian. I think it was Julian. He was just like, oh yeah, man, this is the studio, like you two did Rattle and Hum. And I was like, you think I give a fuck about you two? Like, I fucking don't give a fuck about you two or any of this shit. Like, so it was just kind of really weird, man, because you got to think about it, man. I wasn't young, but I was probably 21 or something, or 22, or I don't know, 23. I don't even know how old I was. Wait, no, I had to be a little, yeah, like 22, 23. And I remember just being like, whatever, let's just get this fucking shit done. Like, you know, the Vandals are playing on the street. I don't give a fuck. Like, it's not out. I want to go see the Vandals and get drunk, you know? And I don't know. And I remember Glenn Danzig was recording there at the same time as us. And Derek stalked him into the bathroom. There's a little bathroom in the corner of A&M Records. He's like, oh, this guy followed him in the bathroom. He sat down the toilet next to him. That was bizarre.
That's awesome. Well, we'll get into the tune now. The track is 3 minutes and 8 seconds. There's a 7 second intro, and it's just the word I used in my notes here to describe it. It's just chaotic from the start. And it's just like this steady kick drum, and Derek's doing these crazy drum fills, power chords. Royce is all over the place with the bass. At 8 seconds, the band kicks in, and at the 22nd mark, there's that killer guitar run that you're talking about. It's just the epitome of what I would consider ska, or a ska punk guitar run. It's awesome. It's panned off to the left speaker, and then while that riff's going on, the band drums kick in, and at the 22-second mark and the 24-second mark, I have to know what you're saying here. And I've over the years, I always wondered, and I was listening in headphones. It almost sounds like you're saying, punk rock, watch out.
Break me, myself.
Break me, myself. Yeah. Punk rock, watch out, to break me, myself.
I wish it was punk rock, watch out. Shit.
Well, that's so awesome. I was in the headphones for like about a half hour before I got you on tonight. I'm just like sitting there going, what is he saying there? And I'm still saying that's what it is. But okay, we're already at 28 seconds before the first verse kicks in, which is a pretty long time. Mm-hmm. But it's not filler. None of this. It all is building. The whole 28 seconds intro is awesome. And we get into the first verse. And it breaks down, and I have to ask you, I know this record wasn't done on Pro Tools, but do you remember if Derek tracked to a metronome?
No, there's no metronome on this at all.
I didn't think so, but man, and I'll never forget hearing this for the first time, and it's still, I love it. Where the verses and the pre-choruses sit tempo-wise, it jumps about 4 clicks when that chorus hits. It just gets so fast, and just the energy of it lifts, and we'll get to the chorus in a second, but I want you to set up these lyrics in the first verse. There's something about myself I can't control yet. It happens time and time again. I'm trying to be. Well, I smash it down, I break it down when I'm trying to be. Well, it's a shame. It's sad to say. There's nothing to see there.
Dan wrote those lyrics, man. And he was having a hard time figuring out who he was, because he was kind of a couple of years older than us. So it was like, You know, okay, so like now I'm stuck in this crazy world of like, you know, serious relationships at that point, because you're getting a couple of years, you know, when you're getting in your like mid-20s, it's pretty pathetic to say that I'm saying these serious relationships, but he's getting serious relationships. He was getting into situations like, well, I work in a factory and it's a good job. Do I quit it? And like, do the band thing. I mean, he was going through a lot of stuff at the time, you know, and that, this is a lot about his mental state at the time, you know.
Now, the demo that you had shared with us, I guess it was just a garage recording or practice space recording. Was that arrangement, was that exactly what it was until you brought it to Julian? And that's when it started to morph?
No, I think the only morphing that Julian did of that was he took the "I saw you just the other day" part out at the end of the song. He just like, there's no need for that. Like, I remember him taking that out. It was almost like he maybe helped arrange the actual arrangement a little bit. At that point, we did have the chorus. The chorus kind of came from like I had said, I was trying to melodic the answer to the call at the end. And it was funny because I think he got the idea because I used to have a class that I'd have to go to. And it was because, you know, as a troubled kid, he's a psychologist, a teacher, and he would take the class out to railroad tracks and we'd bring a ton of bottles and we'd just talk about shit that was driving us nuts and we'd smash fucking bottles on the train tracks. Now, it's kind of like where he got the idea for the hook of the chorus, and then he applied it to what he was going through. And then so when we brought it to Julian, he was like, "This is good. This is a single." And it's kind of like, what? All right. Like, but yeah, I don't think he had a ton to do with that one besides maybe just arranging it, making sure it was a little bit more mechanically sound, you know what I mean, from part to part. He did a lot of work on other songs, but this one wasn't, I don't remember him doing too much to it.
I've always said a true band is a sum of its parts. Here, Dan came in with a lyric or an idea, a shell of a song, but it had to meld with what you were going through growing up and the bottles on the train tracks for the song to truly, truly come together. That's freaking awesome, man.
Well, that's how some of those songs work. Sometimes Dan would write a whole song or like a song like SOS, like Derek and I kind of both wrote a little bit together, like lyrically or, you know what I mean? So there's always like you said, some whole parts, like a lot of times the machines, and I'm sure you know with Less Than Jake, the songs are always never going to be just your song, man. Too many people add the ideas to it to make it what it becomes, man. And,
sure.
You know, I think as a punk band, we would be stagnant if it was like, oh, here's my song, beginning to end. That's it.
For sure. Well, the other thing is, do you remember, I mean, Royce never, I don't think, got the credit as a bass player. Dude was a ripper. Derek's a ripper. I mean, you guys are all immensely talented. But, you know, when you got into doing the song, was Dan ever saying, hey, it should be this feel with the drums? Or did you guys kind of all make up your parts? I mean, was Derek kind of get the feel? Was those bass lines are ripping. Was that all Royce that was writing that stuff?
Pretty sure. I'm pretty sure Royce wrote all that on bass. I don't recall anyone else writing the bass lines to that at all.
Oh, it's for a 21-year-old, it's incredible. It is incredible.
Yeah, I don't remember him writing. I don't remember anyone else messing with the bass lines. It's hard to remember that long ago. You know what I mean?
Sure, sure.
Hey, everybody, don't you dare go anywhere. There's lots more Chris to Makes a Podcast after these messages from our sponsors.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.
And now, back to the show.
But for the most part, you guys were writing your parts together as a band.
Yeah, the machines, it was never like, Dan was like, well, here's this, you know, play something to it. And that's what Derek would play. You know what I mean? Like there was no, I want you to do this. You know what I mean? Or
yeah,
that's not how it was back then. And it wasn't really like that even for like battle hymns even, you know?
Yeah. Well, I figured as much, but I had to ask, getting into the pre-chorus here, totally changes feels. It's got that hi-hat ska thing that Derek's doing, and it's awesome. And this is when the first backing vocals come in. They're in unison, but there's also sporadic harmonies happening. And not many bands can get away with that and make it sound good. See, there I don't want to talk about it. Do you recall, were you doing that prior? Was that something that Julian was talking about? Let's keep some stuff in unison. Let's keep some stuff with harmonies.
You know what, man? I'm starting to think maybe Julian did have more to do with Break the Glass than I remember. Because I think he kind of brought in that pre-chorus lift up idea I think we had something there, and I don't recall what exactly how he was involved with the pre-chorus, but I think that was definitely something you remember him working on with us. You know what I mean? I don't remember. I don't even remember who came up with the lyrics. I don't remember. I just remember there was like this weird, we're going to lift this part up. You know what I'm saying? And going into the chorus, almost like build it up. Well, maybe Julian had something to do with that part.
Right. And, you know, I didn't put it on a click or anything when I was listening to this or a tempo map, but it sounds like it's still kind of in the same groove, this part, as the verse, but it feels like it's ramping up just because of that feel, that hi-hat thing, that ska beat that Derek's doing. And I'm going to say the lyrics now and you can set them up. Well, I don't want to talk about it. You know, I can't live without it. It's a stupid fucking shame. And every time I think about it, I think that I'm so lame.
Yeah. We thought we were losers, bro. All of us did.
I think we all did. I think you're speaking for every one of us right there with that line. On the last line here, on the downbeats, it's cha, 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 cha. Is that what you're saying there? Chas or what?
I don't know. Just yelling.
Just yelling?
Yeah.
I know that you're good at that. I call it scatting, kind of when you're just kind of scatting vocals and you're making little noises, and Michael Jackson did his little noise thing, and everyone, you know, you do that live. You'll put little things in here and there. Again, was that something that you remember Julian saying, we need some chas or some stuff behind it? Or
I probably just did it.
Probably just did
it. Yeah. Yeah. Some of that stuff I probably just did in the studio too. You know what I mean? Like I didn't really have any. I probably heard it and was like, nah, I need something. You know what I mean? And just did it. And, you know, Julian Beach was like, oh, that's great. Just keep that. Dude, that's good. Don't even do it again.
No, it's awesome, man. It gives this different touch there. It just lifts that part. 45 seconds. We're in the song and in the chorus, and it's, I break the glass, I break it down. 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 And that's when the big stereo guitars come in with the vocal harmonies there. And I believe I hear Derek in there.
Yep. Yep, definitely.
Yeah. And it's awesome. And again, I wrote the tempo speeds up here. It's just so energetic. The very end of the chorus, you give this spirited go, you know, and you're back into the reintro. There's no guitar run here, but the band stops before verse two. And it's kind of like a 1-2-3-4, but I almost think like maybe this was maybe Derek on a drum mic, but it sounds like a snotty, like, blah, yeah, 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 in the background.
That's Derek.
That's Derek.
That's 100% Derek. Maybe Royce sang some shouts on the record, but I don't think Royce sang anything besides maybe a couple of yelling parts. And it was all, you know, Dan, me, and Derek singing. So that yelling is, and I guarantee you that it was off one of his drum mics.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. He would spaz out all the time on drums, dude, like, and just yell shit. And I think that's exactly what that is you know, you caught him yelling it on the drum mic. So
that's one of the things that, really, when I go back and listen to this record, and to this day, from the minute New Girl starts, it takes me back to that time period. I always talk about it on the show. It's the memories that you have attached to the songs, why they hit you so hard. But this record breathes, man. It breathes realness. That yelling on the drums, that just those little things. You know, a lot of people leave that stuff out of records. Oh, that's not pro, or that doesn't sound, you know, and those little things are the sum of all its parts. It's what makes this record so unique, I think.
Yeah, you know what's funny is I remember thinking I couldn't believe that these Hollywood record major label people, when they were doing it, and Jerry Finn and all these guys, like, there's feedback in that song, like where the guitar stops.
Yes.
And they didn't take it out. They just like, they left it.
Right. That could have been muted. That could have been muted on Derek's thing when he's counting it off. Yeah. I mean, there's certain things here that could have been taken out and they were left.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that taking those out, it would have taken some of that, what I'm calling that realness and that where the record breathes. I don't know. Just it's unique and it's cool. We get into verse number two. What's the story? What's this? I know I can't agree. When you love me, never get in the dance line for free. You can blow it down to break it, like break my heart into. But you better be prepared. It's such a shock to come in there. What's your story? What's your sign? No, I can't agree. Well, you know you'll never get it in this life for free. You can blow it down and break the glass, break my heart in two, but you better be prepared. It's such a shock. There's nothing there. And I notice on this line in particular, the two and there, there's no rhyme scheme at all going on. Do you recall, again, Julian or anybody making suggestions of, hey, this lyric, or were the lyrics scrutinized at all? Or was this what the lyrics were?
Yeah, no, that was it, man. It was just like, you didn't need to rhyme.
I don't think it needs to rhyme, but that's a lot of times with producers, they'll get in there and under the microscope and want to change things. And again, it doesn't need to change. It's punk rock. It sounds great.
Yeah, man. No, Julian didn't really... I would say Julian was a great vocal coach, but he didn't really try to make us change lyrics. You know, the only real fight in the studio over any lyrics was trying to change, you know, the old word in the Van song, because I didn't want to sing a word Dan wanted me to sing because he wrote that song, you know. And that was the only confrontation that had, or any sort of thought of anyone saying, hey, maybe this is the one, you know, this lyric should be changed, was only that one song. So Julian never stepped in and said anything about any of the lyrics. He coached me into singing a lot better for starters. And he really helped us build these like phenomenally gigantic choruses, you know, especially with the guitars.
He did, man. He did. That's one thing about you guys that I always just, the choruses were always gigantic and they sounded awesome. How much older, how many years does Julian have on you guys?
God, man, he's got what? 12, dude. He's almost 15 years older than me, man.
Okay, so then the reason I say that, you know, I've said this before on the show, and we've had Rob Cavallo was amazing in this aspect. Producers are kind of like poor man psychiatrists. They have to come in and analyze a band. I mean, you guys were, especially you, man, there was no taming Jay Navarro in 1996. You were a hard-ass punk rocker. This guy had to come in. He's 15 years older. Who's the old dude here? He had to somehow harness this energy, and it sounds like he knew when to back off with you guys. He wasn't going to get it too much into the lyrics. Let them be who they are, and that's important with a band's identity. You can't change a band. If you do, then that's not who they are.
Yeah, plus you'd be like a couple 40s deep into some, you know, some malt liquor, and it was like, well, all right, whatever, dude, like, you just kind of let us go, you know.
I wouldn't have wanted to produce you in 96. No way.
Yeah, dude, I couldn't even like stay focused on anything back then. It was just kind of like, that's why you asked, it was such a trip to like go into a studio like that. And yeah, I mean, I guess it was kind of weird, right? But at the same time, I was just kind of like so not even thinking about it or like even giving a fuck. Like, it didn't really dawn on me how crazy it was. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, yeah, all right, cool. Let's fucking record this shit and get, you know, get done or whatever. Like,
yeah, let's go party.
Yeah, exactly, man. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? So the, you know, in hindsight, it's like, holy shit, man, that was like $250,000 endeavor. You know, like, you know, a lot of bands would, you know, kill to get some weird shot like that. And I'm just kind of like drunk and like, yeah, dude, like, oh, what do you want me to do? Like, okay. My turn to sing. Cool. Whatever.
Yeah, well, there's a, again, there's a vibe in this record, and all that comes across. Oh, you know, we get into that pre-chorus here. Fill me up because I'm empty. Why couldn't I just have kept me? You know, it really fucking sucks. And when I try to talk about it, the words seem to get stuck. And on this one, the backing vocals are there, and the four yells, I'm calling the cha-cha-cha-chas, are at the last line. And then we get into chorus two, and it's, I break the glass, I break it down. It's four times, and at the end of this one, it's that killer trademark, you scream down. I break it down, I break the glass, I break it down. There's one thing I've of my friends that can scream like that, and you're one of them. I have, and I could never scream like that and make it sound believable. I can scream, but I can't give it one of those, man. And that down there is really spirited. again, before Pro Tools, do you remember, was Julian doing a lot of punching in on tape, meaning like, okay, we're coming up to the line, we're going to punch in, or did he cut tape with the vocals and put things in? Or?
I remember them cutting tape. You know what I mean? I don't know what, I remember them cutting, and I'm sure we'll probably get to this, because I think it, dude, I haven't listened to the record. I can't remember things, man. Like, I probably should have listened to the song, right?
No, nope, that's why I'm here.
Doesn't it, this has like an outro, right?
It does have an outro.
Okay, so I remember recording the outro separate, and then them getting out a blade, dude, and cutting the tape. I was like, what are you guys doing? Like,
yeah,
they cut the tape, man. Like, they're cutting things.
Absolutely. So for the listeners out there, what Jay's referring to, you know, now it's no different than, you know, you copying, pasting a letter to somebody on your computer. Okay. You do that in Pro Tools, which is a recording program. There's Logic, there's many recording programs you can do this with. Well, back then we didn't have the technology. You'd have this 2-inch thick tape that you'd be recording onto, okay, analog tape. And what Jay's referring to, you'd actually go in with a razor blade. Here's the part that we're going to cut, and we're going to take this vocal and put it somewhere else on the tape. And they would actually use just regular old Scotch tape. Or in the instance of the end outro, which we're going to get to here too in a minute, this whole outro was done on a separate tape that they then took and Scotch taped it to the rest of the 2-minute track.
Yeah, man, it was a pure artistry. I'd never seen it done before. Because I think they definitely cut a few other things too. And I remember the first time they were doing it, I was just like, I'd never even heard of it. That's how, like, you know, not how clueless we were, you know. We didn't even know they did stuff like that. And I remember just being like, what are you doing, dude? You're gonna fuck it up. There's like, but dude, they're masters, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, those old cats that could cut tape were insane. I mean, it, like you said, it was an art form, and it truly was. After that killer scream, we're at the 1 minute and 53 second mark in the song. This is the bridge. It goes till 2 minutes and 13 seconds. The progression changes. The bass runs here, tip of the hat to Royce. The bass runs are incredible. The feel here, the energy, it's just so badass. And at the 2 minutes and 10 second mark, right before we get out of the bridge, there's these four unison hits by the band. Jing, 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 before chorus three. And it's just those hits are just so powerful. It's the only time that they happen like that in the song. We get into chorus three. And it's, I break the glass, I break it down. And it happens four times. Something I didn't mention, and it's in all three choruses, every time you say, I break it down, there's a down that happens. Yeah. And is that you singing that? It sounds like you.
I don't know, man. I have to listen to it again. I did definitely scream over my own vocals in some spots. You know what I mean? So I'm on there at moments, which is totally corny, right? But like.
No, not at all. And again, it adds to the energy, you know, and speaking of energy, I know they were an influence on you, but I hadn't heard something come off tape with the energy since Op Ivy's Energy as this record, you know, not just saying that, man, just Friend to Friend. When I heard Destruction, I was like, damn. Wow, this is really next level in terms of energy and that raw realness. And after those hits, again, the chorus happens. And then this is where Jay talked about the outro. So the song's really 2 minutes and 30 seconds. The last 38 seconds are this ska outro. So ska, it just breaks down, and it kind of feels like the weather changes, a breath of fresh air, just boom, you're in this next part. And you got some pick it up panned off to the left speakers, the old ska pick it up. Remember who did that? It sounds like Dan to me.
I think that's Derek.
Is that Derek?
Pretty sure. The Alkaline Trio vampire himself yelling pick it up.
Who knew? Yeah. Who knew? At the 2 minutes and 46 second mark, there's this guitar feedback that you're talking about,
yeah,
that they left in. It's just nasty sounding. But again, it sounds real. It was real. It's what happened during the recording. The guitar feedback comes in, and it's like in the right speaker, and then the band fully comes back in. And at the 2:58 mark, almost the end of the song, Derek goes to the bell on the ride cymbal. And I remember the first time hearing this, and I still get the same feeling. Damn if it doesn't sound right there. It sounds like 70s Police, like Stuart Copeland.
Oh, yeah.
It's just got, yeah. And he just emulated, mm-hmm. not that it was a ripoff. I don't mean it like that,
oh,
but
it was.
It felt like.
He'd probably tell you that, too. It absolutely was.
I love it. And the song is fading out, and it fades out. And not many songs with this intensity and that are this badass can have a fade out in punk rock and be perfect.
Accidental.
Yeah.
Purely accidental. Like I said, that part, it wasn't even really part of the song. I think it was like something we had been playing and had nothing else to do with it. We just couldn't really do anything with it, but it was the same key.
So the song was the third track on the record. And do you recall if you were playing this song to a live audience before the album came out, or did you not play it live until the record was released?
You know, I think there is footage of us playing at, yeah, there might be, man. I think there's footage of us playing at Fireside Bowl before it was really developed. I think there is. I'd have to go look it up, but I feel like there, it's either that or it was New Girl. One of those two songs, okay, were on this weird tape of us playing at the Fireside Bowl. And I think this was during the Buck 09 tour in 95. We ended up playing, you know, at the Fireside, and I remember seeing footage of it.
For those listeners that don't know, the Fireside Bowl was a legendary venue in Chicago. What was it, 76 and Fullerton?
Yep.
I think Slapstick had a song. And it was a bowling alley that they held punk shows. And man, want to say maybe we played with the Machines there.
Yeah,
but
you did.
I know that. Yeah, yeah. I know that Chicago was always a home away from home for you guys. Your shows there were nuts, as Less Than Jake's were. Do you recall the record coming out and what the reaction was to this song versus the other tracks? Do you remember the audience reaction to Break the Glass?
I definitely remember it was pretty much a standout song every night. You know what I mean? It's crazy. I mean, you know from back then, like, we were already playing to a few hundred people at a show. You know what I mean? Well, we were signed to a major. But when that record came out, and it was like there was such a drastic change in just how many people were singing along. It just it seemed to sink its teeth into people way more than any other songs that we had done up to that time. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
when you hear a whole venue singing that song, you know how it goes, and they're singing the chorus, you're just like, you hear it over the music. I'm just like, holy fucking crap. Why are they singing our song? Like, it's crazy. There's a big difference, man. Like, you know, we went from a few hundred people a night, you know, to 1,000 people a night, you know, and when you go from that big of a jump from like 200-300 people a night or whatever it is, so over 1,000 people, the volume of people when they're singing along is insane.
Right.
So yeah, I definitely remember people singing and I was like, damn, people really like this fucking song. Okay.
That's awesome. Well, you know, I have to say, and it's a little weird, and it's friend to friend, and I know I can say this to you and not have it be weird in that sense, but, you know, there's something special about this record. I know you know that, but I've been a fan of your whole career. I've always loved the Machines. The self-titled record, there's some songs on there I thought should have been massive. I just love it. I love how you guys evolved. Steal This Record, The Killing Blow, one of my favorite songs. Imagine Some Gasoline, If You Ever Get the Feeling of Dread. I mean, I could go on. Your records always have something special on them. But this album, if I ever get asked, I don't think I have anytime recently, but if I ever get asked a top 10 ska punk, this is definitely on it. Amazing record. It's no surprise the reaction that Break the Glass got, because it was the first track that you played me. I'll never forget it. I still get goosebumps listening to the song, and it's been an absolute blast being able to no pun intended, break it down with you.
Oh, thank you, Lion. I appreciate it, man. Respect. It means a lot coming from you, man. You know that.
Thank you, man. And I appreciate you saying it back. It wasn't necessary, but man, love the band. And before we hop off here, what would you like to leave the listeners with? What do you guys got coming up? Of course, the latest record you have came out last year, Revolution Spring, which Roger from Less Than Jake produced with you guys up in Michigan. So what's going on?
Ah, dude, he crushed it. It was fun. I love it. It's probably my top three favorite records that we've ever done. So I didn't know it was going to turn out so good.
That's awesome.
So it turned out good. I'm happy with it. You know, allegedly COVID is over. So back to playing shows. So hopefully playing with you guys and, you know, punk rock bowling and all that kind of stuff. But we're already recording another record right now. So we're doing a split 12 inch with Coquettish from Japan.
Oh, cool. Okay.
It's going to come out on Bad Times Records. So, which you just did a split with Kill Lincoln.
We did.
Which is rad, dude. Which is super rad. Cool split.
Yeah, right on, man. Well, dude, get some sleep, man. Thanks for hanging on the pod.
Bye, dude.
Hey, everybody, don't touch that dial. There's plenty more Krista Makes a Podcast after a few words from our sponsors.
Hello out there.
Yes, we're out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together, we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's Magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much. We'll be seeing you.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is submit your song via MP3 only and your bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured band is Low Standards. They're based out of Fargo, North Dakota and Minneapolis, Minnesota. The band consists of Bobby Peterson on lead vocals and keyboard, Cody Hansen on lead guitar, Pike Taylor on rhythm guitar, Luke Waitala on bass guitar, and Scott Schneider on the drums. You can find their music on Spotify. Here's a snippet of their song, Self Surgery.
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
I definitely agree with you that Destruction by Definition is a top 10 ska punk album of all time. I would go as far as to say it's top 5, man.
Yeah.
It is such a good album. And you touched on so many reasons why, but probably the top reason why is the energy in that album. There's so much energy in that album. And yeah, they're all sick players. The songs are great, but it feels like you're at a show and watching a live band when you listen to that album.
Yeah, you know, Jay is so humble. He would never, I couldn't really say what I wanted to say to him. He wouldn't probably want to hear it, but he doesn't realize how talented that band is. I would watch them and just be like, my God. And live, they were just, it was insane because they would play everything like four beats faster. I don't know how Derek and how the band was keeping up. Royce with those bass lines. Royce never gets mentioned in the punk circles of bassists, and he should.
Dude, he's sick.
He's unreal. He's just, for whatever reason, Royce wasn't ever that, like, look at me, the spotlight guy. He was always just kind of did his thing. But, man, definitely a secret weapon in that band. And that record, definitely top 5. I said top 10, but top 5. There's something about that album that just oozes energy.
Julian Raymond, you brought him up, and I'm glad you talked about him because a great producer or mixer knows when to leave in those elements that provide that energy. You brought up the fact that, yeah, they could have cut out the extraneous vocals and the feedback and, yeah, all that kind of stuff. But all those elements are in here, and it sounds incredible. Like this album still like hits hard too at the same time.
Yeah, it would have been sterile. And you know, Julian's the one that signed them at Hollywood, and I talked about it. I asked Jay for no other reason. I didn't want to know how old the guy was. It's here nor there, but just how much older was he when you recorded this? He was like 15 years older. You know, he was the elder statesman, and he had to figure out how he was gonna harness this crazy unbridled energy from these essentially kids at that point, you know, and how to keep the whole thing on the tracks. Because there's moments on that record where it feels like it's going to go off the rails and the song's just going to disintegrate. There's just, it's awesome.
We could talk about Derek for an entire episode, I'm sure. Just his drumming on this album alone, I think, is something that every punk rock drummer that I know can talk about and rave about. Everybody in this band brought something to this band. Jay especially, as the singer, just someone that could sing but also had those like guttural screams.
Oh, like I said, the one scream, it's like I can scream, but I can't come with conviction like that and make it sound believable. He just has that in him. He possesses that. It's just so cool. Something I didn't mention in the episode, I meant to bring it up with Jay. We shared a bus in 1999 with Suicide Machines in Europe. And in my book, Blast from the Past, as you know, Chris, there's a couple entries in the book with some pictures from that tour, all of us standing outside the tour bus and whatnot. But that was awesome. And by then, they had their second drummer, Ryan Vanderberg, who's also a ripper. Hi, Ryan, if you're listening. Love you, buddy. But I believe it was that tour. I was talking to Jay or maybe Dan about Destruction, and I think it was then that I realized that how much Derek did sing on the record. He has an amazing voice.
I never even knew that before today. I loved when you asked Jay what he says at the beginning of the song, what he's screaming. I never knew. I love that you thought it was punk rock. Watch out. I always thought he said break glass. I thought he was break glass. But what, I can't remember. I have to go back and listen to what he said he actually says there. But yeah, that was, hey, that may have been one of those things that no one ever knew until today. I don't know, but I sure didn't know.
Well, I didn't know, and I've heard the song hundreds, if not thousands of times. I've heard this track, and I was in headphones earlier, just really zoning in, rewinding that part over and over, and I still thought it said punk rock, watch out.
It doesn't even matter what he says. It's all about just the pure energy of it, you know?
It is, and when I told them in the episode, when I saw them play this song, I watched them side stage at Atlantic City. There's probably videos up on YouTube. This was a couple weeks ago. They were just, this song in particular, I just watched it. It takes me back, right back to 96, you know, late 95 when he played the rough mix from me that we played during the episode. It's just, I loved the track from the minute I heard it.
Hey, that's how I feel about No Face. No Face was the first song I heard from this album. And that's still to this day. That is just my jam. The bass on that song. Just everything about that song is amazing too. Just one more thing I wanted to touch on from this episode is that Jay talked about how, you know, they were young, 21, 22 years old, whatever they were. And he talked about how it didn't dawn on him how crazy it was that they were signed to Hollywood Records. And they were, you know, he said in hindsight, it was a $150,000 endeavor. You know, this punk rock band from Detroit didn't care that U2 had recorded at this studio. What do they care? They're a punk rock band from Detroit.
Yeah. Well, and it says something about what Julian brought to the table for this band, because I told Jay in the episode, I wouldn't want to produce him back then. He was menacing, man. There was very few guys I was intimidated by, and man, he used to control that stage. He was menacing, and they were ragtag punk rockers partying their head off. He said it. I knew the Vandals were playing later. I didn't care about the U2 studio. I wanted to go party with the Vandals.
Dude, and I also, you've talked about it in episodes before, but I can't imagine actually cutting physical tape. Like, I don't even understand how that's possible. How do you, like, how do you make the perfect cut to, like, perfectly where the...
I'll tell you how. One of our producers, Steve Gravac, who did Borders and Boundaries, he had a ruler, and he was measuring the hits out exactly. He'd cut the tape exactly. Okay, and then there in the control room glass, the window, there was probably 500-600 cuts of tape. That's where he'd stick them up there, and then he'd meticulously put them back together so that the drums were exactly in time. That was what you'd do in Pro Tools now with a couple clicks of the mouse. You had to do it manually. It was incredible.
That's totally insane.
Yeah, and the whole outro of this song was on a different take that they had to splice with the first half of the song. That's awesome.
Wow. Wow. And what my last memory of being blown away by the Suicide Machines was actually when the last time Punchline was on tour with Less Than Jake, we knew Roger had produced it, and we'd been like, dude, you got to let us hear that. You got to let us hear that. We like kept asking him, and then finally it was one day, I think maybe it was on Easter Sunday, he said, all right, you guys want to come on the bus? I'll play it for you. And I remember just all of us sitting there with like our jaws dropping, like, damn, this sounds so good. This band just, they're just always amazing. And I agree with you that they have had a lot of evolution in their sound. Like Battle Hymns was a lot different than Destruction by Definition. Then the album after that was a lot different. They had some like kind of like straightforward like rock songs.
Yeah, and
like
some that, ballads. That song. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But always an awesome band.
And speaking of awesome bands and artists, Chris, we will continue to get awesome bands and artists here on the podcast. If you would just go out and give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It's simple, it's easy, and we'd appreciate it.
It's really easy. You just click the 5th star on Apple Podcasts. I know not everyone listens on Apple Podcasts, but even if that's not where you listen, go leave us a review. And if you have 30 seconds or a minute, you can type like, man, I really like this podcast. You have great artists and you guys are really cool, or something along those lines. And it just helps other people find out about our podcast, which in turn will help us get more and more awesome guests. And that's what you all want. That's all what you obviously want, correct?
That's right. Every little bit helps. We appreciate all the support. If you haven't already, please join the Krista Makes a Podcast Facebook group. It's quick, it's easy, it's free to join. We have a lot of fun in there. If you haven't already followed me on Instagram, please do that as well. I'm at Less Than Chris D. And I want to thank this week's guest, Jay Navarro from the Suicide Machines, my old pal. It was an awesome episode, and we'll see you next week.
Well, I don't know. Everyone has a podcast now.
Well, not really. What is true is that, according to Nielsen statistics, 55% of the U.S. population, that's over 155 million people, have listened to a podcast, and 24% of the population, that's 68 million people, listen to podcasts weekly. And these numbers continue to trend upward.
What's also true is that over 75% of all podcasts fade away after the first few episodes. It could be for a variety of reasons: lack of strong concept, poor production value, people not realizing how much time needs to be dedicated to it, or simply just not knowing how to get the word out about podcasts. That's where WeKnowPodcasting.com comes in.
At WeKnowPodcasting.com, we have a combined 25 years of podcast experience, and we can help you achieve your podcasting goals. Whether you need help starting a new podcast or want to take your currently active podcast to the next level, we got you. From consultations to concept development, from theme music to editing, promotion, animation, graphics, you name it, and we're here to help.
Don't become another failed podcast statistic. Let us guide you and help your show become a success. Check out the website at WeKnowPodcasting.com, and even if you're on the fence, don't hesitate to reach out. We're friendly guys, we're passionate about pods, and we're here to help.
Hey you, do you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX, and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.